A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. And guess who's in studio? Dana Perino. If you're watching the stream, you're seeing her from America's Newsroom, fresh off that show, 2 hours long. With some a little bit of time, she jumped into our show in between co-hosting The Five because she wants to see me in person. And she's got a brand new book out today. It's fiction, but it's a lot of it's based on what we're all experiencing. It's called Purple State. And Dana, you are, and people are just listening in their cars, you're wearing purple.
I know. And you know what's interesting is that I actually don't really like to wear the color purple. I would never buy it on my own. But you know, here at Fox, because we have different clothes we need to wear every day, I have this beautiful blazer from the wardrobe department. And I thought if there was ever a day to wear the purple jacket, it was today.
Right. This is not a coincidence.
Right.
So
is planned.
This is a shorter statement because Karl Rove likes to talk.
Does he really? What was that video of his too? Like, I need to talk to him about it. Like, his face was so close to the camera.
Yeah, why was that? He was pretty close to the camera, Allison, right? But he looked good. It was good.
I mean, Carl's amazing. He doesn't age. I've known him for 20 something years. Like, it's weird.
Maybe
it's
a Swedish thing. Aren't you Swedish?
Oh, could be a Swedish thing.
Aren't you Swedish?
Am I Swedish? Do I look Swedish?
A little bit.
I'm Italian. My last name is Perino.
But is it all? Are you all Italian?
No, I'm not all Italian. Actually, when they did 23andMe on The Five years and years ago, and they surprised everyone, I was only 2% Italian, and I freaked out because I've been like given awards from the National Italian American Society, and I can trace my great grandparents back to Italy. Even before it was Italy, right, in that area. But it was northern Italy, so it was a little Swiss situation.
Well, I just want to tell you, they did take back O.J.'s Heisman because he killed somebody. I don't know if this amounts to the same thing. Would they take away your Italian awards?
I don't know. I hope not, because maybe they'll just consider it honorary. I was kind of mortified, though, during the show when we announced it, because we didn't know. We opened the envelopes as a surprise. And I remember also I was 1% Albanian. But as Gutfeld looked at me and he goes, "Wow, you are so white."
Well, that's true. I would.
Jesse was 0.1% sub-Saharan African,
and that's why he got into an Ivy League school. So a couple of things. Number one, the bad news is for you when you take that test, your DNA is now on file.
I don't worry about that, but yeah, I understand some people do.
Now people kind of like worry about that. But tell me a purple state real quick for people that have to leave before we get a chance to really expand on
it. Great. So it's my first work of fiction. If you liked Everything Will Be Okay, which was the mentoring book I did for young women going through their quarter life crisis, this is the fictionalized version of that. I write about three young women from Manhattan. They're going through relationship and career conundrums, and one of them gets an opportunity to work in politics and goes to Wisconsin, convinces her girlfriends to go with her to work on the election for the Democrats, and they are determined they're going to return to New York, but along the way some romance gets going.
Really?
Yes.
In Wisconsin, and does it stay in Wisconsin? Do they? And well, you can't give it away.
I mean, they go through. They have to make choices, and I feel in some ways when people read it, they're like, wow, it reminded me of what it was like to date in my 20s. Or for like mothers and daughters who are reading the book are like, oh my gosh, my daughter is going through this. But also I love Wisconsin. It is the ultimate purple state. It goes back and forth and back and forth. But everyone I've ever met from there, I love. And I write about a town that is fictional. I call it Cedar Falls in the book, but in real life, it's modeled after Cedarburg, Wisconsin, a beautiful, fantastic, wonderful place to live.
So that is the table's been set for you to pick up the Purple State, Dana Perino's latest book. It's fiction, but it's based on all her knowledge of politics and romance, two areas in which she's an expert in. And she's going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by Fox News congressional correspondent Bill Malusian.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio.
This week on the Fox True Crime Podcast, psychotherapist and author Lena Dorhali breaks down the mind of Chris Watts and the warning signs behind one of America's most disturbing family murders.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, Dana Perino is here, America's Newsroom, co-author of The Five and, excuse me, co-anchor of The Five, and now author of a brand new book called The Purple State, already a multi-best-selling author. This is a new chance because this is fiction.
Yeah.
But based on everything you know.
Well, I've always, you know, it's funny, I found in my keepsake trunk the first book I ever wrote in the first grade, and it was called If I Were. And I had all these things like if I were a cat, if I were a pig, if I were a dog, if I was a horse, if I was a hippo. And I did illustrations and wrote these stories. And I think kids, especially ones that like to read, you have an early aspiration to be an author. And I never really let that go. And yes, I've written nonfiction, but this was a real departure from that. It was so different. It was such a professional challenge, a solitary endeavor. And the truth is, honestly, I'm smiling ear to ear. I loved writing it. I loved it. I couldn't believe how fast the time would go on Saturdays and Sundays when I sat down from 11 to 4. Those are the hours I dedicated to write. And then I'd come down and I'd give Peter what I'd written. And he read every draft. I probably redrafted 5 times total. I had a great editor. And I love these characters so much. I think about them all the time. I wish they were real.
Right.
And I'm excited to see what they do next.
But is it based on a lot, like people don't know you do stuff for young...
Like mentoring.
A lot of mentoring here for young people. They first break in. A lot of times their first job. And your door's always open to them. So a lot of these stories because you recognize something consistent?
So John Glenn is one of our colleagues here. And he read it a few months ago. And he said, is this about one of the girls here at Fox? And I said, it's about all the girls here at Fox, because it really starts with these 3 young women who are going through a quarter life crisis, and they live in Manhattan and they love New York and they're always going to stay here. They met at NYU and they go through what many young women go through. Your daughters are a little young for this, but they will get there. The quarter life crisis is when you start to realize, wow, everything I planned is not working out. Because girls do this, right? They're like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to have this career. I'm going to get this promotion. And then I'm going to meet this guy. And then I'm going to get married. And I'm going to have 2 children by the time I'm this. And you start to realize at 25, 26, like, whoa, none of that's going to happen. And you have this little bit of a crisis. Did I choose the wrong career? Should I leave? Am I living in the right place? And the main character, Dot Clark, she gets an opportunity to go and work for a super PAC in Wisconsin. That's the ultimate purple state. Mm-hmm. Goes back and forth, Republican, Democrat. She wants to help the Democrats. So she convinces her 2 girlfriends to go with her, and they plop down in Wisconsin, northwest of Milwaukee, in the middle of January. And they've got 1 year to try to work on this election. And then some romance ensues. And these are not your typical guys that you're meeting in New York.
So when you have to write about romance, do you look at, like, do you read different magazines for this?
I read a lot of fiction. I read a ton of fiction. So I'll read like a...
You do read fiction. That's amazing. Because you're in a fact-driven world.
Right. And so I read a lot of articles and I listen to a lot of nonfiction podcast. If I'm going to read a nonfiction book, I often listen to it. I actually hard copy read the George Washington one, but listened to Sam Houston of yours.
Yes.
Okay. Right? I like to listen to nonfiction, but I just adore fiction. So I'll read like a historical fiction, then a deep literary fiction, and then like a romantic comedy. And then I'll cycle through different types, mystery, maybe a crime novel, things like that. And then I would admire the craft so much, and I never thought I could do this. I truly never thought I could do this because I have never taken a creative writing class, but I've read so many books over the years, and I would say I'm a very good reader. Remember, like even when you're going on vacation, I'll recommend a book for you for wherever you're going, whatever kind of book you're interested in. So another author that I'm friends with, Andrew Graff, we were going on a walk one day after a book signing that he did for me at the Little Point Bookshop. And he said, you said you have an idea for a novel. I said, oh, I'm sure everybody says that. I don't want to bother you. And he said, well, how long is this walk? I said, 3 miles. He said, start talking. And about 200 yards down the street, he said, wait, it could all come down to this one gerrymandered district in Wisconsin. And then I started the next weekend writing it. It came up with all the characters. So I have never written romance, obviously. Jesse Waters asked me if there was sex in the book. I said, well, there's allusions to sex in the book, and he was very disappointed.
Right.
But I ended up at in the categories leading up to the book release, I was number one in clean and wholesome romance.
I did not know there was a category, but that does, it is fitting.
Clean and wholesome romance.
Yes. Wow. That is fantastic. I'm sure it's going to be number one overall. So when you put this book together, do you put a list of characters? Like, I know of George Washington's Secret Six, they go, this is going to get confusing to people. Put a page of who everyone is so you can keep flipping back.
Yes. And you have to, I made some little character sketches. So, for example, some of the non-main characters are Gene and Ted Jankowski, and they own Reader Falls Bookshop in this fictional town. And so I would make sure I remembered, like, what color hair did she have? How did she dress? She was from England. She has an accent. And I think about Danny Dawson. He's the main love interest. Or Hot Cop Jake, we call him. And his twin brother, Tommy. There's also, I think this is actually very relevant to today, in addition to cross-party possible romance. There's a family farm involved. And there's a foreign entity that wants to buy up the farmland because they want to put, not an AI data center, that wasn't what I was thinking, but like a foreign-owned high-tech factory. And they're trying to buy up the land, but the farmer doesn't want to sell. And so that's also a part of the story that I try to work out.
Which is also real, because China's also trying to buy up all this.
That's exactly right. And it's also something that I know. I grew up in Wyoming and Colorado. I love the family farm. I know they want to keep their way of life. I also love New York. I love the young women that I work with. And I love people like my cousins who live in Wyoming, and they're ranchers and they're amazing guys. And I just feel like Americans are much more neighborly and get along a lot more than they think they do because of the idea of polarization.
Right. But don't you think polarization really didn't really exist like it did now during the Bush years when you were in the White House?
I mean, at the time, it felt like, wow, how can you call President Bush Hitler? But now it's just so routine. And I do think social media has made things much, much worse in the perception and of polarization, and also the things that anonymous trolls will say online.
So I understand you're signing books today at Barnes & Noble.
Yes, on Fifth Avenue, believe it or not. My Wyoming self can hardly believe that.
Well, so you're going to be on Fifth Avenue right here, Fifth and 50th?
Or is it maybe it's like 48, 47?
I just walked by there. It's great. Yeah. That's a great store. It's multiple floors.
Yes.
So go down and see Dana today, especially WABC listeners.
I love that. Hi, right? WABC.
Yes. And also May 4th, WABC Big on Long Island. You're going to be with another, is it the Teddy Bookshop? The Teddy Bookshop store?
I can't remember. It's Steve Israel owns
Oyster
it.
Oyster Bay?
Yes, it's up in that area, the most beautiful area.
Right.
And I love that he left Congress and got a bookstore.
Right.
A
Democrat that was Nancy Pelosi kind of thought that he'd be the next speaker.
Right.
And he just said, no, I'm out.
I know. I'm very excited to go up there. And especially because for the Democrats who have read the book, they loved it. And I do write it from their point of view in a way that is fun and honest and I think very respectful and hopeful.
So you have, it's somewhat bipartisan.
Yes, oh, definitely.
Oh, definitely bipartisan.
Yeah.
So I want you to hear something that's not bipartisan. Are
okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
You were press secretary during almost the whole Iraq war, weren't you?
Yes.
So we know that the war in the beginning, 70 votes in the Senate, everyone's on board, and then it started to switch.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me if you ever heard something like this in Barcelona.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is the governor of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. We've got a feeble-minded, trigger-happy president who plunged us into a war where no threat was present, with no clear objectives and no exit plan. We need to call that what it is. That's fascism. Or at least it's fascist curious.
I want to bring you greetings as well from a nation that is in crisis. I'm not going to sugarcoat the gravity of what we face right now in the United States. This is the most significant threat to American democracy since the Civil War. Donald Trump in our country is trying to end our democracy.
It's so shockingly shameful to, you know, and it's one of those things where, let's say that my sister and I were fighting and we had a big argument, but if someone came in and said something bad about my sister, I would defend her to the hilt, right? And that's how I feel like we should be in America as a family. We can argue here, but I would never go overseas and denigrate America. Now, I'm sure that they would say, look at what President Trump says about us. I don't care. I would never say that about America. And this was a big socialist conference. That was not about American ideals. Do they think that people in the room are supporting American ideals? in that room? Right. No, they are socialists.
Why would you go?
Was a socialist conference.
Why would you go to that room?
I would never go.
Right. So to me, I remember like Senator Lugar and some other Republicans that are respected were saying, listen, the war, we got to find a way to get out of this before the surge.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember Harry Reid saying, everybody knows the war is lost?
Yes.
I mean, that was devastating, but it didn't happen in Barcelona.
Right.
You know, it didn't happen in Iraq.
No, it happened on the floor of the House and the Senate. It also happened behind closed doors. I will also tell you this. Senator McConnell and John Boehner, the congressman, the speaker, they were in charge. They ran the schedule. The Democrats forced, I think it was 27 votes to try to strip money from the troops, and they did not succeed on any of them. They kept trying. But when troops are in harm's way, you have to make sure they have everything that they need. I don't think anyone takes Walls and Chris Murphy that seriously, but I do think it's shameful. And I think that the Democratic Party, as they go into 2028, really has to think about what kind of party do they want to be, and can they withstand the pull to the left?
Right.
And I don't know if they can.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, Jamie Metzl was just here. He worked for two Democratic administrations. And then we had Julian Epstein comes on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're not buying into what Mamdani's selling. Nope. They're not buying into what Bernie Sanders selling. But I was shocked that I know everyone laughs at me when I say this. I was shocked that President Obama is. Because he pushed Hillary. He said Biden was more acceptable than the Bernie Sanders surrogates. And then he pushed him out when he had to. And then he says, I could go to Bashir. I could go to Shapiro. Wes Moore could use a boost. Gavin Newsom could use some coaching. He's got a book out, might need some little juice. But he chose to go read a children's book in New York City with the mayor. And you're not surprised.
I can understand why Obama would want to do it, right? Because I think part of him feels like he should have more fully embraced his socialism tendencies, right, in terms of Obamacare. He wanted Medicare for all. It's what he really wanted. He wanted the whole enchilada. But because of his advisors telling him, like, we could maybe try this and that, maybe just cut it back a little bit, and that way it will pass the Congress, he said, okay. But I think he looks at Mamdani and thinks, wow, I could have been more like that. Mamdani is the new shiny penny. He's also saying he's not running for president in 2028. So I can imagine that Obama's like, if I'm going to put any of my political energy anywhere, it might be with Mamdani. What I think is even more interesting is who Mamdani asked to be with him. Mamdani's not asking for Kamala Harris or Newsom or Shapiro or Bashir. He asks Obama to come, and that is telling to me, because he thinks that the party doesn't have a good option in 2028. They always want to go back to the well, and they want to go back to Obama.
Yeah, it's. I did not know he asked for President Obama to go, because I know President Obama offered his services. I didn't know if that...
Yeah, like, why don't you come with me, and we'll talk about free busing and kids. Now, honestly, the clip's kind of cute.
Of them, right? Together, yeah.
And Obama, he's great on TV, he's great on camera, he's good in a crowd. I can understand why Mamdani would want it too, but they're kindred spirits.
So before we go, in reading this book in the summary before you get an introduction, it seems like a movie. It seems to me like a built for a movie. Do you get that? Did you have that in your mind?
Well, when I didn't know what I was doing at the beginning, I can't remember who it was. It might have been Paul Morrow, who, of course, is our Fox News contributor. What people might not know about him is that he's also a great fiction editor. He used to teach Hemingway as a professor.
Molly Hemingway.
No, Ernest Hemingway. He's brilliant. He knows all about literature. And I think it was...
Oh, I thought you meant Hemingway himself.
No, sorry. He used to teach Hemingway as a topic.
Okay.
Sorry. Not Molly.
Wow.
I'm like, Ernest Hemingway. No, Paul Morrow. He said, write scenes and then stitch it together. Wow. So sometimes in my mind's eye, like, there's a scene where Tommy and Harper go fishing, and it's her first time ever fishing. And I just imagine what it's like as a city girl. All of a sudden, you're asked to put one of these night crawlers on a hook. And the scene, I could envision it. And what I'm very proud about in the book is the dialogue is great. It reads super fast. But also, there's an audiobook that goes with it. A wonderful actress read it. I have to say...
You didn't do it?
No, because I think... if you have a fiction book, it should be done by somebody like an actress, like a narrator.
Right.
If you nonfiction, it should be your voice. So no, I didn't do it.
Interesting.
I felt like that would be like self-publishing. But you have to speed up the audiobook a little bit, because the clip I listen to, I understand the pacing.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm like, oh, no.
Well, you know,
she talks a little faster than that.
They've told me you can adjust that on your speed on the listen. So
I do.
Yeah.
I'm at 1.5.
So listen, go see Dana today. What time?
Barnes & Noble. I'm going to head over around 2.
2 p.m. in New York City on 5th Avenue. Around 46th, 47th,
I think, and 50th at the Barnes & Noble.
It's really cool. By the way, great store. It's got a multiple floors, very nice people. And then on May 4th, if you're in the area, you're going to be on Long Island in Oyster Bay.
Yes.
So that's going to be great. Is there any other events you have? Because we might be heard in those areas.
In New Jersey, I'm going to be at Books and Greetings on this Sunday from 12 to 2. You've been at Books and Greetings.
Yes.
Yes, I'll be there. And at Point Pleasant Beach High School through the Little Point Bookshop, another place you've been, on May 2nd.
Dana Perino Books.
DanaPerinoBooks.com.
Fantastic. Dana, congratulations.
Thanks.
We'll
I hope
again.
You love it.
Absolutely.
I want to get your take on it after you read it.
I absolutely will. And I brought a copy home over the weekend for my daughters. Unfortunately, they were not home. So they're going to be back this weekend. But listen, New York City, do not let Dana down. I want everyone to go and
check
it out. You heard me.